It's a diagnosis that no one wants to receive, but one that more than 1.5 million Americans face every year. Cancer is the second most common cause of death in the United States, claiming the lives of an estimated 1,600 people every day. Voices for the Cure is an opportunity for some of the countless people whose lives and loved ones have been touched by cancer to share stories of courage, love, and hope. This Sunday, January 12th, would have been the 24th birthday of Elizabeth Blue. She perished from lymphoma in 2012, less than 1 year after her diagnosis. Elizabeth was a writer and poet from a very young age, and she was a creative writing major in the Honors College at the University of Arizona. She is remembered as a strong and opinionated young woman, a feminist who was passionate about justice, beauty, and art. Her mother, Lucia Maya, is a teacher and healer who now considers it one of her passions to tell others her daughter's story.
She was a very unique and wise young woman. She was way beyond her years in a lot of ways. And I do believe that some part of her knew that she wouldn't live to be an old person, and that she needed to do a lot of living in the 22 years that she had, and she did that.
When did her cancer diagnosis enter your life?
November of 2011. Elizabeth had moved back to Tucson. She'd been away in Seattle for a year, and she knew somehow that she needed to be back in Tucson and finish up her college years at U of A. And she started having these strange symptoms, swelling in her face and her neck. Interestingly, the doctors dismissed her symptoms for quite a while as being vanity. Finally, she was diagnosed in the emergency room with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We were just completely shocked. She was had been a vegetarian most of her life by her own choice. She was a devoted yoga practitioner. Didn't have any of the risk factors for this illness. And she took the news really incredibly well. She really saw it as an opportunity to do her own healing. And she called it an initiation.
A lot of people blame themselves or blame their bodies. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me how it was for Elizabeth?
I never really heard much in terms of blame at all about the cancer. And I do think that her spiritual beliefs helped in that way, because I think that she believed, as I believe, that we each have a particular path that we're born into, and that this was her soul's path. I believe, as a healer, that healing takes many forms. And for some people, having cancer can be part of their healing process. And for some people, even death can be part of their own healing process, which is hard for some people to understand, I think. But I really believe that death is not the end. And I think she believed that as well.
What were the sorts of things that became more important to her as her time grew short?
I think in some ways, nothing changed for her. For her, family and friends were always her most valued parts of life. After she'd had the brain surgery, she was quite different. She was still totally conscious and aware, but it seemed like she had no ego left. The one thing that was really different was that one of her most beloved companions was her cat. And those last couple of months, it was like her cat didn't even recognize her. And she knew that, and she completely let go of that relationship.
Was there something in Elizabeth's life that she felt was incomplete or that she wanted to complete?
The way that this process unfolded was so gentle and graceful that it felt like it gave her time to complete relationships, to heal, you know, challenges that, you know, as mother and daughter, of course, we had plenty of challenges. She was not always the easiest. She was strong-willed, and I am too. So it gave us time to heal our own relationship, and also I think for her with all of her close family and with her friends. You know, you asked what was important during that time, and family and friends were certainly at the forefront. But the other thing that I know was really important to her was her writing and sharing her writing. She wrote from a very young age. She wrote poetry. She wrote memoir. And as her best friend said, it was like she knew she needed to document her life. So during the time that she was dying, I told her that I would do my best to get her work published. And I was also writing during that time, and I'm continuing to write. And I told her that what I was hoping was that there could be a way to share our work together. And she was really happy about that. That was what she wanted as well. So that also, I think, became something that was important to her, or remained important to her during that time.
Some other people who have participated with Voices for the Cure have talked about that it's almost as if they end up being counselors to their friends and loved ones mm-hmm. every time they break the news.
Mm-hmm.
As a parent, how did you deal with that? Was it easy for you to talk to people about mm-hmm. what was happening with Elizabeth?
What I found was from the very beginning of her diagnosis was that what I needed to do was to send out group emails as a way of sharing the news publicly so that I didn't have to say it over and over again at each stage. So that was part of what I started then sharing on my blog, was these group emails. And I was very public and open about what was going on at each stage through Facebook and through my blog, so that I'm happy to talk about it, but I didn't want to have to give people the news over and over again. That, to me, it's like reopening the wound every time. And at the same time, my experience with Elizabeth, the process of being with her during her illness and then during her death, and especially this last year and a half or so since she died, my own process of working with grief in myself, I feel like all of my spiritual teachings that I have experienced in my life prepared me for this time.
Talking about the end of Elizabeth's journey, when did you know that it was time for her to come home and leave the hospital?
She was in the ICU, and she had had two brain surgeries at that point. None of the doctors would talk about hospice. They just were talking about rehab, because she had had a stroke at that point. They were talking about radiation and trying some other chemo drugs. Finally, a nurse said to me one evening, "I heard that you're starting to talk about hospice." And I was in complete shock, because we hadn't started talking about hospice. I was still in such denial that I was believing that she was going to go through more treatment and recover at that point. But once the nurse said that to me, I really could see then the reality of the situation. The next morning, I asked the doctors directly, "What is realistic here? Should we be considering hospice?" And only when I asked them that question did they say, yes, hospice might be a good option. So at that point, at that moment, I said, okay, then let's get her home. She needs to come home. There's no reason for her to be here in the ICU. And within a couple of days, we were able to get her home, had a hospital bed at home, and were able to create a beautiful, sacred environment for her to have her last 2 months in, where she could eat the food that she loved. She could have her family and friends around her all the time with beautiful music playing, whatever she wanted to hear. We could read poetry. We could just be with her without the lights of the ICU, without the noise, without the constant interruptions. And she died at home. I was sitting with her when she died. And I am so grateful to have had that time to be alone with her. And then my sister and I took care of her body. We were able to do a home funeral, meaning that we actually cleaned and prepared her body ourselves and dressed her ourselves. And we actually drove her body, our family did, drove her to where she was cremated. So it was completely done within our family, with friends. And that was also a really special and important part of that process.
What do you think was significant about that to you in terms of your healing?
A chance to say goodbye and to do it in a sacred home environment, without strangers around and without feeling rushed. In the same way that, you know, I wanted to take care of my children in our home when they were born, to be able to take care of my child when she died at home in that way was really an important piece of that completion process for me.
During her time in the hospital, were you ever in conflict between your own spiritual orientation towards healing and traditional medicinal practices as they are in a hospital?
I didn't find a conflict. I've always been a big believer in doing what works, which can mean usually a blending of allopathic medicine and energy medicine. So while she was in the hospital, even in the ICU, I was able to have someone come in and give her acupuncture, along with I was giving her Reiki all the time. And all of the treatment that she received, I believe, was actually what she needed to receive. But I was able to do my work and have others do work with her as well. I had a shamanic practitioner who was able to come into the hospital and work with her. And all of it, I think, worked together to create such a graceful and love-filled experience, peaceful experience of healing.
That was Lucia Maya talking about her daughter, Elizabeth Blue. You can listen to more of our conversation and many other stories on the Voices for the Cure page at news.azpm.org. There's also a link to read some of Elizabeth's poems and reflections.